This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today's podcast is sponsored by FastBitcoins.com. FastBitcoins provides a simple way for people to buy Bitcoin directly from their bank account or with cash in physical stores. Their services are rapidly growing in availability across the UK, Estonia, as well as Canada, and they're launching in Australia soon too. FastBitcoins is committed to providing high-quality Bitcoin-only services. They want to make sure that the growing number of people interested in buying and benefiting from the possibilities of Bitcoin can do so easily, securely, and with as few distractions as possible. Learn more about FastBitcoin's range of services at FastBitcoins.com, including how you can earn Bitcoin for free through their referral scheme. That is FastBitcoins.com. FastBitcoins.com, go check them out.
They tell me that I shouldn't, and I tell them that I will. They tell me that I'm cocky, and I tell them that I'm ill. This game is not a hobby. I go in like kamikaze, burn up tracks like Ricky Bobby. Man, you catch and know the drill.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on the founder of NoirBnB. He is a real estate professional, digital marketer, entrepreneur, all-around interesting, fascinating guy. This is Stefan Grant, a.k.a. Steph is Dope. Welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
My man, I'm doing awesome, man. Thank you for the opportunity, bro. How are you doing?
Yeah, man. Not too bad. We're still in this strange situation, but it seems like things are slowly returning back to normal. So I look forward to things opening and hopefully getting back to my normal life.
Yeah, most definitely. I know you're probably craving some Nando's right now. So, so yeah, man. But I feel you most definitely.
Awesome, man. So I've just given a really brief intro there, but tell the people a little bit more about who you are.
Yeah, man. So my name is Stefan Grant, a.k.a. Steph is Dope. And a lot of people don't know that the dope actually stands for Driven On Positive Energy. I actually was like yourself. I was rapping, making music. I owned a record label, was doing my branding thing for a long time. But also, I was born in Jamaica and moved to the States when I was about 6-7 years old. So that means I've got a bajillion jobs. But yeah, man. So a rapper, marketer, graphic design, branding specialist, a bunch of different things like that, man. But honestly, man, just try to stay positive, stay working, and just try to be forward thinking. I can be, I guess, kind of controversial when it comes to my thoughts. But I mean, I feel like in this era, if you've got common sense, it can come off controversial. So it is what it is. But yeah,
it's true, man. I feel the same way. I feel like there's very little that I say publicly, which is actually controversial. Like, I think that the majority of people around the world would actually totally agree with most of the things that I say.
But somehow
it's at least on the world of the internet, it seems like people find it very edgy. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. It is fun. And I'd be lying if I said that I don't enjoy trolling a little bit. It's not even trolling. It's like, if you just say something, it's like, it's people just get crazy, man. So
yeah, it is what it is. Awesome, man. So tell us a little bit more about your life story. So you were born in Jamaica, and did you go to school there for a couple of years then, I presume?
I did. Okay. I went to school there for a few years. And ironically enough, when I got here, I actually had to skip a grade because I guess I was a bit advanced for where I was. Shout out to the Jamaican educational system. Mm. Always very big. And on top of that, I mean, education is very important to Jamaican culture overall. My mother was a teacher, my aunt is a teacher, my grandmother was a teacher, so education is very big in our family. But even coming from Jamaica to America was a very big culture shock. So that was interesting. And even just being a black person from Jamaica, like you gotta fit into American culture, but also assimilate to African American culture. But I mean, I love American culture. I love African American culture. So I mean, it was definitely a bit of a culture shock and a bit of adjusting. Something that a lot of people don't know is that I learned how to be American I learned how to be African American by watching the first Bad Boys movie on repeat. Right.
Oh,
so,
wow. Okay.
So there was that, and I got a lot of the rest of my American culture from watching Joe Rogan on like the Man Show and like Comedy Central growing up as well too. So there was also that. But I mean, yeah, bro. So crazy stuff. But honestly, I mean, like love living in America. I go to Jamaica pretty often as well too, man. Yeah. But it's been a cool vibe. And I think that actually being Jamaican as well kind of provides a bit of context for my political outlook, because one, I'm Jamaican, but I'm also a Rasta, and being a Rasta, we don't really get too deep into politics. So I'm always kind of like an outside looking in type of person. I don't vote or any type of stuff like that, but I'm always paying attention to what's happening and trying to make sure that I'm always up to date. So, I mean, yeah, man.
No, that's really interesting, man. So I know you've been in the States for a long time now, but when you first came over, what were some of the big culture shocks or things that you found really different compared to back home in Jamaica?
Oh man, a couple of different things. Well, in Jamaica, this is actually kind of similar in different places around the American South. One of the things that I noticed is that like in Jamaica, whenever somebody walks by your house, whether it be morning, afternoon, evening, they say, like, it could be a stranger, somebody you've never met, they walk by and they're like, hey, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and like it's customary to greet. And in America, like, you just kind of go on about your business. I mean, in places like Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi, it still kind of has that old school feel. But in Florida is very southern, but the most geographically southern state, and there is a lot of southern culture here. But also, it's also kind of a mixed bag. I mean, you got a lot of New Yorkers and people from the West Coast and people from the Caribbean, a lot of Latin nations. So we're all just kind of out here just doing what we do, man. So I think that was really different. And even to that point, I know like you actually put a tweet out saying how like when you speak to Americans, like you use different kind of words to kind of match things up. And when you said how like in America we say eraser, and in England they say rubber. Like in Jamaica, we say rubber as well, right?
Okay.
So I remember being a little kid in elementary. Like, bro, I remember being a little kid in elementary school, like with this super Jamaican accent, asking kids for a rubber, and they're looking at me like,
oh no,
you want a what? So yeah, man. So stuff like a lot of different stuff like that. But I mean, on top of that too, It was also pretty cool too, because in Florida there's a big Caribbean and a big Jamaican community, so I was also kind of able to just still be myself and still kind of fit in that way as well. So it wasn't too bad. It was cool.
That's cool, man. Yeah, with the language ones in the UK, for a Brit going to America, the two that are most likely to get you in trouble would be rubber and fag.
Yeah.
If you ask someone to pass you either of those, you might get a strange look. So yeah,
things probably get a little bit dicey.
That's definitely funny, man. Awesome, man. So in terms of integrating, how did you find it? Did you find that people were you moved to Florida to begin with? So you've been in Florida the whole time. Okay, cool.
Yeah, pretty much. I lived in Florida for like most of my life.
Yeah.
Then when I graduated high school, I moved to LA. So I lived in California for like a year, and that was a totally different vibe, but really awesome, cool people. Like, love the energy out there. And then I ended up moving to Washington, D.C., ironically enough. And before I even had moved to D.C., I went to go visit my brothers there. And the thing that bugged me out was that, like, so, like, they lived in Maryland right outside of D.C. So my brothers took me to a club in D.C., and one of the things that bugged me out was, like, they had a very rich and beautiful Black culture. We were in the club. It was popping. Like, everything was cool. And when we first got there, I asked my brother, I'm like, where are we? He's like, we're in D.C. I'm like, Washington, D.C.? He's like, yeah. Like, before I got there, I thought it was, like, all government buildings and, like, I didn't know that, like, people actually lived there and, like, there was, like, a whole scene and culture there before, you know what I mean? So I lived in Florida, D.C., Maryland, a couple different places, man, yeah.
Okay, man, that's cool, man. So fast-forwarding a little bit, I read a blog that you posted the other day, which was actually talking about you founding this company, Noir B&B. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the story about, well, one, what Noir B&B is, and two, why you actually decided to found it. What's the story behind it?
Well, so essentially what Noir B&B is, I mean, of course, everybody's heard of Airbnb before. So a lot of people don't know is that Noir actually means black in French. So I was after my, well, let me provide some full context.
Yeah,
so I told you I was making music and rapping, and I was like putting together my own shows and the whole nine. So we had actually planned a hip hop show during the A3C Music Festival in Atlanta. And while we were there, we booked a couple different Airbnbs. I booked one for myself because I got to like a day before everybody else did, just to kind of check things out and make sure everything was cool. And then after that, like I left, I checked out of that original Airbnb and then checked into the one with me and all my homies who were coming to the show. So we checked. I actually got to that one first as well. I did a whole like video of how cool the spot was and how dope it was and stuff like that. And then all the rest of the homies came the next day. And then we all like woke up the next morning and they were like, and the cops are like showed up with their guns drawn, right? Like, yeah, oh, wow. like it was like literally guns in our faces. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So come to find out, the next door neighbors had called the cops because they thought we were a bunch of black kids that were like robbing the house.
Oh God.
Essentially.
Oh no.
So yeah. So the cops came, had their guns drawn. It was a whole crazy situation. But I mean, like I told you, like my name Steph is Dope. Stands for Driven On Positive Energy. So when everything kind of gets wild, I try to like shift things and kind of de-escalate things and just put them back in a more positive direction. So when that happened, I kind of used my social media skills and I asked the cops and I was like, hey, like, is it cool if we take a selfie together? And this is after like we showed them the paperwork and like they knew we were there legally. So they were still kind of checking things out a bit, but I asked the cops who were hanging out with us. I was like, is it cool if I take a selfie with you guys? And they were like, yeah, sure. Like, as long as you get my good side. So I was like, all right, cool. So me and my homies took a photo with these cops and then I posted it on my Twitter account. And I was like, yo, the Airbnb we're staying at is so nice. The neighbors thought we were robbing the place and called the cops. And I posted a selfie of me and he's like, yeah, bro. Oh, yeah. So me and these cops, they're smiling ear to ear in this picture. And even, let me kind of provide some even more context beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. So one, this is around the time that like stuff happened with Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown and different stuff like that as well too. So that, I mean, that was in the back of my mind, knowing that the situation could go totally left. But at the same time, I was like, man, like if I can use this moment as a positive thing to one, just kind of shift that narrative a bit, put things in a better direction and put out that like, hey, although this could have went very violent, went very wrong, like it didn't. So let's enjoy this moment, keep it moving and cool. Mm-hmm. But when I posted a tweet, it ended up going viral, like crazy viral. I didn't even expect it to go that big. And like BuzzFeed was hitting me up and,
oh, really?
And mad publications, like it was going crazy.
That's weird when that happens.
Yeah. Definitely weird when that happens. You know better than probably any of us, right? World record holder.
It's weird.
But yeah, like so that whole thing happened and like we went viral and we were getting a bunch of interviews and like that was crazy. So like later on that day, we like went to our show, the show went well in the whole nine, and then we ended up talking about the whole thing, me and all my friends. And then like the next couple of days, we all went home back to where we lived. Like I went back to DC, the homies went back to Florida, and like that was it. And we were still getting a lot of outreach and publications and things were kind of buzzing. But when I got back, I had a bunch of my friends hitting me up like, bro, like I've gone through the same thing with Airbnb. Like not even just with my situation. Cause like with us, it was like the neighbors called the cops. Right. Mm-hmm. But with other people, like they would try to book a place and people would see that, like, this is a black person trying to book a spot and just immediately deny them. Or, wow. or some people would have to like they would try to book a spot mm-hmm. with their regular profile photo, get denied. And then like they would take like a stock photo of a white person, put that as their profile photo. They would try to book and then they would actually get accepted with the booking. So
wow. So
that happens. Or
just out of curiosity, is this before mm-hmm. or after they put in, because I remember there was some point in a couple years ago where they sort of put out a specific policy, like a specific anti-discrimination policy.
Yeah.
I want to say it was maybe around 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm wondering if this is before or after that.
Bro, they created that policy specifically because Noir B&B was invented.
Wow. Okay.
Precisely.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Like them doing that was inspired by us wholeheartedly, right?
Interesting.
So like a bunch of people hit me up, people that I knew personally, people from around the world were hitting me up. Like this is what happens all the time. So and just kind of like being happy that I made it through and stuff like that. So after the situation, kind of sitting around for a bit, I was like, okay, like there's a real opportunity for us to shift this and make something even more positive come out of this. So initially when the situation happened, besides BuzzFeed reaching out to us and a bunch of other different publications, Airbnb reached out to us directly and they were like, hey, sorry about what happened. We can give you guys a voucher for future stays. And that was, we appreciated that. But at the same time, we were like, bro, like a voucher isn't going to solve the problem. And like, this isn't an isolated case. Like it can, this can happen again. It will happen again. And mm-hmm. it might even happen in bigger ways. So one of the people who reached out to me in Airbnb, like I sent them an email with my idea and what we had in mind, and they liked it.
And what, so they sent this, it to the what was this idea?
So my idea initially was, I was like, well, look, if Airbnb has a problem with discrimination, let's figure out a way to build a community within their community so that one, people don't face this issue anymore, but also like it shows that Airbnb kind of cares about this issue, their demographic, their customers, and mm-hmm. wants to actually make some headway and making sure stuff like that doesn't happen again. So yeah. That was initially my idea. So, I mean, like you've heard of VH1. So like you've got like VH1 and then you've got like VH1 Soul, which is like focused on like the Black community and whatever else. So mm-hmm. essentially same concept. Sure. So I sent them kind of like a brief deck and some of my ideas, and they liked it so much, they actually ended up flying us out to San Fran to their headquarters. So we had an entire pitch meeting, told them about the idea. They had us sit down with their entire Black staff, which is like 20 people. Bro, yeah. They did the whole like, hey, we love Black people. Like they did the whole shebang, which was cool. I mean, I appreciated it, right?
Yeah,
it was cool. But like we were in negotiation with them for like 3 to 6 months, and like nothing was really happening. But we told them, we were like, hey guys, like this is what happened to us, wasn't just some flash in the pan. Like this might happen again. And a couple months after the initial meeting, Harvard actually came out with a study, and they were like, hey, like they came out with the actual metrics and data showing like just how many people get discriminated against. Like one, tons of Black people actually get denied from their bookings. And not even just that, even Black hosts and property owners tend to make less money than white hosts do on their platform. So we had actual data to back what we were saying. Mm-hmm. So we brought that to them, and we had a whole conversation with them, and they were kind of like, yeah, we're going to make a statement, and just a bunch of PR type stuff.
Sure, sure.
So we knew that it wasn't going to be a very big thing. Like they weren't adamant about solving the problem. So mm-hmm. a couple months after that, this whole hashtag blew up, and the hashtag was Airbnb While Black. So I sent an email and I was like, hey guys, we told you, Harvard and Ivy League institution just told you, and now you've got another issue on your hands. Like, let's do this, let's make it happen. Mm-hmm. And they gave me the whole, yeah, we're going to make a statement, and like just another bunch of PR stuff. So I said, well, look, I had already bought the domain for noirbnb.com maybe like 6 months before we decided to launch and announce it. And I just kept it on hand because I was like, man, like maybe we'll never use it, but just so I have the domain, let me just keep it and have it on hand. So then when after the whole Airbnb While Black thing took off, I said, you know what? They're not serious about this. Let's just jump out there and see what happens. So my partner at the time, she was like, well, look, I'm going to make a landing page. And we literally didn't have a logo, no brand, no tech, no anything. We just said, we're going to make a landing page. And it was a Friday. And we said, if by Monday we have 100 email signups, then we got something to kind of roll it. So I immediately got on Twitter and did a whole like tweet storm about, I'm like, look guys, I'm trying to build the future of Black travel. Like you guys remember my situation. Here's what we're doing now. And I put the whole thing out there. And it took off like wildfire, man. Okay. Like it was insane. And I've got to give a big shout out to Black Twitter. Although Black Twitter can definitely be a very wild place. without them, man, like the we wouldn't have gotten as much notoriety and as much virality as we did. I mean, like they really helped us take off, man. So it took off.
A lot of people right now are going to be thinking, what on earth is Black Twitter?
Yeah.
People are like, listen, there's a Black Twitter.
Listen, man, I'm gonna tell you right now. Besides Trump, Black Twitter gives Twitter its viability in a lot of ways. Just from the memes and the jokes and just the conversation, Black Twitter like has to be at least a quarter of Twitter's overall valuation, right? So that's an entire other conversation, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But without them, like, we wouldn't have taken off as big as we did. So. Like they gave us a lot of love, and we had like by Monday came around, we had like 14,000 signups. Wow. At that point, it was like, okay, like let's build this thing, let's make it happen, and it was just history from there, man. So like that's the essential origin story of how Airbnb kind of came about.
I gotcha. And what are the sort of core values or principles behind the idea and the company itself?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, the core premise was that we wanted a place where Black people could find accommodations and not have to worry about being discriminated against. A lot of people actually think that an Airbnb is just for Black people and no whites allowed. And like people would email us like, hey, like I'm a white person.
Yeah.
I hate that you guys even had to do this because discrimination shouldn't even be a thing, but I want to know if I can sign up and be a host. And I'm like, yeah, like we would love to have you guys. Cause my thing is like, we wouldn't want to leave a platform that kind of, I don't want to say facilitates discrimination, but I mean, where discrimination happens, we wouldn't want to go from that platform to creating another platform where we discriminate against people. It just doesn't make sense. Exactly. Right. So like, look, our whole thing is like, we're open to everyone, no matter your race, gender, your orientation, like just come in, rock with us. And like that's what it's about for us. So like, it's about, essentially it's a place where people, Black people, people of color can find safe accommodations, cool experiences, cool places to go and just connect with other folks who just aren't racist people. So that's the whole concept, man.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. No, I think, cause to be honest, I think a lot of that will just come from the name. Right. Cause if someone sees it, they'll just think, cool. You know, if I saw a white BNB, I'd be like, "Oh, that's not for." I'd be like, "That's not for me."
No. But the funny thing about it is, like, people literally, like, some people would like some folks would ask us if they're allowed to book with us, and then we would get like your super Aryan race trolls that are like, "What if we make white BNB?" And I'm like, I'd be like, "All right, bro, like, go ahead." You know what I mean? Like, good luck, I guess. You know what I'm saying? But like, we definitely got some of that for sure.
Sure, man. So I was reading, so this leads me up to the blog post that I was reading. Was it just yesterday or the day before, where you were talking about just some of the, you were kind of venting.
Post
you were going through about a lot of the issues that you had with dealing with the situation. And on this podcast, you know, I'm not particularly keen to, you know, name drop or, you know, throw people out there. We can link the post if people want to read the blog post. But what I found really interesting about it was as you were telling the story, you were putting some of the lessons that you learned and which you are sort of now taking forward. So can you kind of give a little overview for the listeners about what happened there? And I think more importantly, what you learned from it.
Yeah, man. Well, so essentially, even when I came up with the idea, when the situation initially happened and we were getting all those calls from all the different media publications and all that, like my phone was blowing up, my DMs were blowing up, like everything was kind of going crazy. So one of the people who was there, I'm not going to say her name, you guys can see the post when we link it, but she offered to kind of help me with the PR and kind of managing some of the incoming emails and stuff like that. So I said, and I'd actually, one, I was working with her on that event. She was the person who actually booked the Airbnb for all of us. And my idea was like, all right, well, she's cool. We're building a company for essentially the Black community and the Black experience. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I kind of hate is the whole gender war that happens on Twitter in general, but the gender war in the Black community, like that annoys me a lot too. So I was like, well, look, if we could, like the same way I wanted to put a positive spin on the experience that we had with the cops, I was like, well, look, let's also put a positive spin on Black men and women working together and building something great. So that was my initial premise. And I was like, well, hey, she was there, she helped. And on top of that, she had way more corporate experience than I did. I was like, well, look, let me connect with her and let's build this thing, man. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to her to have her help me. And we were building the company. She was the person who flew out with me to San Francisco to meet with Airbnb, like the whole thing, man. So I was like, well, look, I'm going to have her help me with this whole thing. And we're just going to build it from there. And essentially, and like I said, she had a bunch of corporate experience and she's also a couple of years older than I am and knew a bunch of people in the design field and in tech and whatever. So I was like, well, look, I'm going to be CEO. I wanted to make her CPO. Chief Product Officer of the whole company. Mm-hmm. And I was like, look, I can get the growth. I can get people to come to this site and sign up and all that, whatever else. But I don't know anything about building back-end tech infrastructure. So if you know folks who can do this, then you do your recruiting thing. I have nothing but faith in you. Mm-hmm. Let's just get this thing to market as soon as possible. So I gave her basically the keys to the castle in a lot of ways to have her build this whole thing. So there was that. And she recruited a bunch of folks who, I mean, I was like, hey, I don't care who who they are, where they come from. As long as if they can do the job, then let's just make it happen. It just so happened a lot of them were from the LGBT community, mm-hmm. but also who cares? Because like, hey, I don't care if you're gay, straight, whatever. Yeah. Like, if you can do the job, let's make it happen. Let's build this whole thing, right? Yeah, so yeah. That was my initial idea. So we were building it for a couple of months, and I brought in one of my guys. My Nigerian homie Jide brought him in. You know, shout out to all the Nigers and all that.
appreciate it.
You already know. Yeah. So brought him in, and we were, and honestly, even that was kind of special to me as well, because I'm like, man, look, like I'm a Jamaican, I'm Caribbean. The co-founder of the young lady, she's African American. My boy Jide is Nigerian. Like, we got almost all of the diaspora represented building. I'm like, this is like Wakanda, let's make it happen, right? So I'm all super amped and ready to go, and like we're like building this thing, and like there were so many hiccups from us trying to choose the right platform to build on, and just different stuff like that. So to kind of diverge a bit, while I'm building this whole company, I'm also planning my wedding with my wife, and I've known my wife since I was like 15 years old. She's also known Rania, because like we've done events and my wife has been there and like the whole nine. So like I was like, well, look, if I'm gonna get married and we're starting this whole company together, like why not invite my co-founder to the wedding, right? Mm-hmm. So this chick, ironically, the wedding date was on her birthday. We didn't even plan that at all, but the wedding date was on her exact birthday. So we invite her to the wedding. She was so hype and ready to go. Like she was like up all night and like whatever else, but long story, she ends up like falling asleep and missing the flight to Jamaica, misses a couple of flights to Jamaica, doesn't get there until like 9 at night after all the festivities are done, like the whole nine. So she gets there, and mind you, it's Jamaica. I love Jamaica, my favorite place on the entire planet, but it's getting way safer now. Things are getting way better now, yeah. But at the time, and even then it wasn't as bad, but at the same time, we're like, hey, you're not from Jamaica. You just got here. It's 9 at night. We don't trust you just jumping in a cab and going half an hour away from where we are. So we said, just hang out in our homegirl's room. And our homegirl knew her as well. So we're like, look, just hang out in our homegirl's room, crash for the night, go to your Airbnb tomorrow. But let's just hang out tonight, enjoy the day, and cool, just do what we do. Mm-hmm. So we all hung out, cool vibes and whatever. And everything was awesome. But like, she hung out with us that night, and then the next day she hung out again. And I'm not even thinking that, like, hey, like, you were probably supposed to leave yesterday, but like, I'm in Jamaica, the resort's all inclusive. I've got 1,000 rum punches flowing through my veins. Right? You know what I mean? Like, I'm just enjoying the vibe, right? Yeah, yeah. So we got married on a Saturday, and by the time Monday rolls around, we get a call on Monday morning, like, hey, one of your guests' IDs is still at the front. And like, if they're still here, then they've got to pay that tab. And if they don't pay it, then you've got to pay the tab. And essentially the tab was like $500 a night. So I'm like, hey, I'm not trying to pay that. Right. Cause I'm just not trying to pay that. Like, it's not even my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
So I immediately call my co-founder or text her. I'm like, hey, like the resort is saying that your ID is still here. It's a $500 tab. I don't know what you want to do, but like, you might want to go get that taken care of. I'm going to enjoy this honeymoon with my wife. I'll catch you in a bit and let me know what's going on. So like, there was a whole dramatic ordeal even from that. Like, she's telling us, I didn't even mention this in the article, but she goes like, she's like, man, like if I would have known that I was going to stay on this resort and they were going to charge me like this, and we were going to be surrounded by armed guards. There were no armed guards. It's an all-inclusive resort. Like, you don't even want that kind of ambiance anyway, right?
Sure.
So she gets super dramatic and is like, well, this is why we started an Airbnb. And I'm like, homegirl, let's not even do this. Just pay your $500 tab and we can keep things moving. So long story short, like, she gave us a bunch of runaround, didn't pay it, got like super melodramatic. Like, one of our friends had to help us pitch in and pay for the whole thing, and like, we paid the rest when we were leaving, and like, it was just a whole, like, it was a week-long ordeal, right? So, like, there was that. So then, my wife and I, after the honeymoon, get back to Florida, and like, I'm talking to my co-founder and trying to figure out what's going on, and telling her essentially, like, look, whatever happened, we got a company to run, things are crazy, right? Like, let's just focus on that and keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. So that was my essential mission. But the next thing happened was that, like, we ended up having a call about our accounting. It was me, her, and my other co-founder, Jide, And we're all in the call. We're like, okay, like we should probably bring in an accounting company to figure out the numbers and make sure that we're not overspending and make sure all the bills are paid for and just all that type of stuff. So in order for us to even have a proper grasp of where we were financial-wise, and let me kind of even run it back, because after this article came out, she told me how I was irresponsible and not paying attention to the money. And what I'm like, look, I'm like, I've run businesses before, and I'm running business, multiple businesses now. Mm-hmm. I know the expenses that come with buying and building a website. And we had raised about 11,000. Mm-hmm. I knew for a fact that we weren't running through 11,000 at that point in time to build a business. So like in my mind, I'm like, I don't need to be watching the money every single second of the day, because I know how much all the expenses cost already in my mind. So from knowing, I'm like that money's gonna be, that money can give us 6 months to a year of runway to build what we're building, right? Mm-hmm. So I wasn't, and like I said, I trusted her to do what she was doing. So my mind wasn't even on that. So as we're on the call about the accounting and kind of running through everything, and essentially saying that we all need access to the money to see what's going on, she's like, she gets super dramatic and is saying how her mother should be our accountant, and we don't need to hire a third party company. And I'm like, after what happened in Jamaica, I'm like, yo, I don't trust you or your mom or anybody who knows you really with anything financially related at all. So let's just go with this outside company. And my other guy, he agreed. So like that was essentially the whole thing. So after that, we were like, all right, like we all need access to the account. And she was like, no, I don't trust him. Da 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 da. I'm like, all right, well, whatever. So at some point in the conversation, her phone dropped out, and it ended up just being me and GD on the call. And I told GD, I'm like, man, look, I'm sorry about that drama and all the negativity. We're all co-founders. Like let's just be transparent. You've earned your role here. As the CEO of the company, I'm going to override her decision and I'll give you access to the PayPal and we'll just move from there. Mm-hmm. But throughout, like somewhere between in the middle of me saying that, she got on the call. She got back on the call, but didn't say anything, but heard me say that, right?
Oh boy, yeah.
So I mean, but here's the thing, though. I would have said that with her on the call, regardless, because I don't. Sure. It doesn't really matter to me, right? But she heard that and assumed that we were trying to plan a coup against her or whatever, and it became this whole dramatic thing. So after that, she goes, "I see what you guys are doing," and da 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 da. And I got super livid, and I was like, "Man, look, forget it. We'll revisit this later." And we discussed whatever else we had to discuss, and then we all got off the phone. Yeah. And then the next day, I tried to like log into the PayPal, and I couldn't. And I was like, "Wait a minute! I know the password to this account. Like, why is this password not working?" Right. So I tried a couple times, still couldn't get in. And then I eventually sent her a text message. I was like, "Homegirl, what is the login for the PayPal?" And she sent me this super long text thread about nothingness. Mm-hmm. And then like the last text that she sent in that was, "I have nothing to hide, but everything to protect." And that drove me mad, because I was like, yo, what is this fake Shakespearean garbage that you're saying even mean to me? This means nothing to me. And like you saying you have nothing to hide means you have everything in the world to hide. Clearly, right? So at that point in time, I was like even more livid. I said, all right, like this is the game we're gonna play. Something's not right here. I need to get access to this, right? So at the time, Mr. Robot was like in their second season, and I was super into the Mr. Robot show, and like how like he's a whole, for those of you who don't know, like he's a tech hacker guy who's like just super nice to the computer stuff. So I woke up like a day or so later around, but one, I could barely sleep just being so stressed out about everything that's going on. I woke up around 2 or 3 a.m. and I decided to just like hack my way into the account using like multiple like backup email and refresh, like signed up getting into the PayPal account. And mind you, we had raised almost $12,000. And when I logged into the account, Zuby, how much money do you think was in that account, bro?
Less than 20 bucks. I can't remember off the top of my head, but less than 20 bucks.
Bro, $8 and 15 cents was in that account, bro.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So at that point in time, I almost lost it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, how is this possible? This is crazy. I started going through all the transactions. And mind you, like, so she has a company called Wake Up Star, and I'm looking through the transactions, and like, there was like $500 transactions, like transfers to her account, like multiple of those. Then like at certain point in time, like she must have just gotten lazy. She's like, forget it. He's not paying attention. I'm just going to use the main card. Like, bro, she's using the card at burger spots down here in Miami. And she's like, I've been to these burger spots. Yeah. The tab she ran up there, like, you must have been buying food and beers for like multiple people. Like, you didn't, like, there's no way you by yourself ran up that tab. And then like, so also like in the beginning, I invited her to come up to DC because like G-Day was living. I was like, let's all be together in the same place and like work on this business. So she flew up and she crashed in my house for like basically a month, 3 weeks. And I'm like looking on the transaction sheet and like, bro, she's like buying food at restaurants that were, first of all, she bought the tickets to fly up to DC with the company money, right? It's like all the places that we like went to go, like she's like buying food on the car. I'm like, yo, like homegirl, like where's your personal money to like pay for this? Like our accounts aren't your personal slush fund to just do what you want to do with it, right? Sure. So I'm like checking the dates, seeing the numbers, and the majority of the of course there were some company expenses like from like server costs and customer service, like all that was there, mm-hmm. but the majority of it was just her blowing money fast like Rick Ross. Like it was bro, it was big me. You know what I'm saying? Like for real, like Maybach, I couldn't believe it. Like, oh, it was wild. Like, so like at that point in time, I start taking screenshots of everything because I'm like, okay, I'm gonna need this at some point in time. And who knew I would need them for an article 3 years later, right? But
yeah,
that's not the point. But like, I had to like get all the evidence and like compile it because like if I told G-Day and our other team about this stuff, like they wouldn't even believe it. And not only them, like our advisors, our like investors, like everybody had to see like exactly what was happening. So I document all this stuff, get screenshots, and I download all the transaction history, like the whole nine, and like just lock everything down. But after that, I go through all of our different like heavy accounts, like all our like infrastructural stuff, mm-hmm. and I change all the passwords. Because I'm like, look, if I can't trust you with our money, I can't trust you with anything else because like you're just not a trustworthy person. So I locked everything down. But
at this time, she was still on board still throughout all this.
Yeah, she was on board, but like literally, like I told, like bro, I woke up at 2-3 a.m. and I did this. I spent from about 2-3 a.m. till about 6 in the morning just locking everything down. Right. Mm. So when she woke up in the morning, she woke up and like dropped a message in her group chat. She's like, yo, we're being hacked. We're under attack. I can't get into our accounts. And I respond back to her. I'm like, are you serious? Wow. What's happening? Like, even though I knew what was happening because I locked everything down, but like, I couldn't let it be known what was happening then because like I had to let everybody else know. And just so we could all be on the same page. So I spoke to G-Day about it. And then like the next person that I spoke to was our creative director, who was a young lady that she hired. I shouldn't even say young lady because they were all older than me. Like not to be an ageist or be or whatever the term
it's,
is.
It's okay. You don't need to excuse it.
Yeah. Right. but like, yeah. So I told her about it. And mind you, like this is her, like, I don't think they had spoken for maybe years. Mm-hmm. But this lady knew that the woman who we hired to be our creative director was like really talented. Like, I mean, granted, I didn't like her as a person, but her design skills mm-hmm. were amazing. She was the person that we needed to choose because like she got the brand, got the vision, and she brought the look that we needed to kind of get it across. So mm-hmm. I mean, I will never deny her that at any point in time, right? So I told her, I'm like, yo, what's her name? Stole all the money. It's crazy right now. This is what's happening. I've got to lock everything down. Like, this is what's going on. And the first thing she says is, one, that we shouldn't remove her from the company. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like she just embezzled all of our money. Like, this is going to set us back crazy. Like, what do you mean we shouldn't remove her from the company? Yeah. And then she gave me a bunch of just BS that I can't even remember or recall right now. But then she goes, all right, but if you do fire her, then we've got to be very, like, we got to be like the big corporate guys and give her a severance package. I'm like, severance package? Like, she just spent her severance package.
She just took the severance package.
she took it off. Like, even then, like, what am I gonna give her? Like, the $8? There's nothing to even give her at this point, right? So that was like my red flag with her. But I just kind of kept it moving because, I mean, while everything is going on, I understand the psychology of Black Twitter. And one thing that I know is that Black Twitter loves drama. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that I wanted to put out there was because, like, they were riding for us. Like, they wanted to see us win. And I'm like, man, the last thing that I want out there is that, like, within the first 3 months of people even knowing who we are, that we've had to fire our Black female co-founder. Like, I mean, you want to talk about intersectionalism, like, that is two big intersections that you don't want to piss off at all, right? Oh, so, like, I'm like, man, look, how do we navigate this in a way where we can keep her on the company, things don't blow up in our faces and get crazy and put a bad hit, like let's just keep it clean and just move forward. So my initial idea was just keep her in the company, even if she's just like a figurehead mascot type person, like let's just figure it out some way somehow. But what ended up happening was that we caught her red-handed and she denied everything. And I'm like, bro, I've got proof of this. Like what are you even saying? And then she got to like making stuff up and trying to deny it and spin it. And I'm like, okay, like this isn't even a person that I can even work with because like there's nothing sane that's gonna come from this. So my next phase was like, let's remove her from the company and get her out of there. So eventually we did, and that was an ordeal within itself. I could talk about that all day, but we got her out of the company. Yeah. Oh, side note. while this is happening, right? We like we're blowing up an entire other company called NoirBnB with an E.
Feminine version.
Yeah, the feminine version of NoirBnB, right? Like no misogyny, right? but they pop up and they're literally like trying to copy our entire business model.
Yeah.
Trying to steal all of our users. Like whenever a journalist like mentions us or we promote an article, they pop up in the replies like, "Hey, we're the other NoirBnB. Come check us out." Like So
I'm just thinking some people are so shady, man.
Bro, you want, like, man, like yo,
come on, man.
Man, the sickest part about it is that initially, like I said, in my idealistic Marcus Garvey vision, right? Mm. When I first heard of them, initially I wanted to merge with them. I'm like, man, look, we're both two companies trying to serve the same market. Why split the pie? Let's work together because it was me and my co-founder. Mm-hmm. It was him and his female co-founder. I was like, well, look, let's all partner together and build this whole super NoirBnB thing and let's just corner the Black travel market. Like that was my vision. But they were so shady that I ended up having to trademark. I had to trademark our name and their name because I'm like, hey, like, bro, like you're not gonna come up and steal my idea because whatever. Like, so
to even have the same name though. I mean, like. I don't know. I'm obviously an outsider here, but just dishonesty and people being disingenuous and lying and cheating and stealing, like that really grates me. It doesn't matter where it's coming from. It can be business, it can be politics, it can be personal stuff. Just, you know, that's why, I mean, you know, we'll probably talk about this a little later, but you know, with so much of the stuff out there, it's just like, lying, you know. I'm just like, why can't people just be honest, man? Just be honest. Because if you look at so many problems, this is something I've noticed. Maybe I'll put like some tweet about this. But if you, most problems that exist in society stem from lies, right? Yeah. Like if you see a problem or some drama or whatever, and you root it back, it's normally because somebody was lying or some people were lying and people are lying. And then once you tell one lie, you can't tell one lie, right? Then you got to tell the lie to cover up the lie and then the lie to cover up the lie. And it just, that's why I'm just like, look, people, just be honest, just be authentic, have integrity. And yeah, sure, feathers might get ruffled in some places, but in the long term, it's better to just be honest and upfront. Otherwise, yeah, I don't know. It's just
Bro, we live in the era of narratives,
Yes.
because the truth doesn't matter. I would say in real life it does, I would hope for most, but when it comes to especially like internet stuff, like whoever can spin the best narrative, especially on Twitter, if you can spin the best narrative, like that's what people are gonna run with, right? So, and to be honest, like in my naivety, right? Like I expect people to be honest and upfront and forthright, but that's just not the case, man. And I had to learn that lesson like the very, very hard way, man. So like even with them, I had to trademark the name, and then they got out there and saying that I stole the name. And like, bro, if you check the records of when both of our websites were registered, mine was registered like 6 months before theirs. Like it's like this stuff.
It's not
either way. So
undeniable. Yeah.
It's undeniable. But either way, like that's an entire other blog. Like, bro, I need to talk to Netflix. I need a Netflix documentary that Tiger King has nothing on what transpired, man. So there was that. But then, so we get homegirl out of the company, and that other company had eventually changed their name. I'm not even gonna say what their name is now, but they had to change their name, and folks can look that stuff up as well. But so that happened, and then after we got the initial co-founder out of there, I said, well, look, right? I didn't want us to get the whole bad narrative of us kicking, because I mean, like people could spin it as, oh, the two male remaining co-founders of Airbnb kicked out the female co-founder because they're misogynist, he-man,
Oh my
woman
gosh.
haters. Like, so I said,
The
well,
narrative.
here's the thing, right? The narrative. But I see the spin before it happens. I already know how it's gonna go down. So I was like, man, look, so that we can avoid that, let's promote our creative director to our new CPO. And even then, she was the one who was designing it, the front end, and she also knew a bit of coding. And just, I was like, well, look, like let's make you the chief product officer, because I mean, like you know what you're doing, your design skills are impeccable. Like let's just make it happen. She didn't even want to be CPO, actually. Like she wanted to be CTO, because like apparently like there are no male CTOs in tech, and it would have been a cooler narrative for her. And she wanted to, and she wanted to, she wanted to get a, she wanted to get like a co-founder title, because co-founders get all the accolades. And I'm like, this isn't about accolades. Like let's build the company and solve a problem, serve our market, and change our lives. But either way, whatever, like cool. Like I bent the knee and did all that, and all that was cool. So we did that. And mind you, right, her design skills, like I said, amazing, loved it, absolutely adored it. But she was one of the most difficult people to ever work with in life, ever. Like, but I just said, you know what? Like, I don't have to like you, but let's just work together. And that was a major mistake, because the thing about it is, like, man, look, if you're gonna work with folks, you've gotta like them on some kind of level, because it's about the culture of your company or or whatever you're trying to build. Like there has to be a bit of camaraderie there.
Yeah.
And it was
Especially
almost
with
impossible.
something very small.
Exactly. And it was impossible to build it. But in my vision, I'm like, man, I knew what this, I know this thing, I know what it could be and what it can be and what it will be. Let's just get it there. And my thing is, I'm like, man, look, I may not like you now, but when we're rich and we're on yachts, I'll probably love you. You know what I mean? But up until then, let's just push through. Like that was my mentality, man. So, and now that I think about it, like I was really caught up in this limbo of trying to appease the social justice crowd, but also be an entrepreneur and build a business. And like those things,
They clash.
they clash. They,
They
because
have
like
different goals.
they have different goals, different morals, foundations, like visions, like they just don't work well, man.
No, and you
So
can't satisfy them. This is the thing. You cannot. This is the thing with the whole social justice warrior movement thing, ideology. I've said this from the beginning, right? I never bought into it one bit, because you cannot satisfy these people. It doesn't matter. Like, there are going to always be bean counting, and you can never get perfect representation of everything, and there's always going to be a problem, and something is always going to be offensive, and you can't use this word, and this is problematic, and this listing says master bedroom, and someone finds that offensive because you think I'm joking? Did you see?
I'm a realtor.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't even use the term. We can't even use that term anymore. Trust me, bro. I know, bro.
It's just so nutty, and every 2 months it changes again. It changes again, and it's just like, man, like from the start, I was like, look, I'm not even gonna try to appeal. Because a lot of people, especially because I'm a musician, right? Of course,
yeah.
Right? And in music, right? Music has a heavy, heavy left lean, and you know, here in the UK, same in the US, etc. And which I think is kind of funny, because I actually think a lot of, especially in hip hop, I think a lot of people are actually secretly kind of more right wing.
Oh yeah.
I think a lot of people maybe just aren't really political. But I think if you kind of like boil it down, especially in hip hop, like hip hop is the most sort of capitalistic, masculine, like non-PC genre culture thing out there. So it's
bro. Do you know how many rap songs shout out like Trump? Like before he won, like
oh yeah. You've got entire
people love Trump.
Oh yeah,
people love Trump, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Jay-Z said what? I'm the ghetto's equivalent to Trump or something.
Yeah.
Mac Miller had an entire song called Donald Trump. Didn't
Ray Shremmer has a song called Up Like Trump.
Yeah, there's lots of them. I don't know. I just think a lot of. I think it's like you said. I think a lot of it is narrative more than sort of truth and actual belief when it comes to a lot of that. I think a lot of people with the Trump thing, for example, this is coming from an outsider, someone in the UK. I mean it's the same in the UK because you get people are sheepish, right? People do the same thing, and I think a lot of people feel that to be a good person, you have to oppose Donald Trump, right? This is the narrative they've been sold. So rather
than Orange Man is bad.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's why I find that never stops being funny, because it's literally like that, right? And it's funny because Trump has been around. He's been in the public eye for decades. Mm-hmm. And he didn't become all of these things that you're now saying he is until 2015, 2016, right? The guy's been around for ages. And I never heard all of these accusations and things before. And I was like, wait, so people suddenly flipped, right? Like those women on The View. Donald Trump has been on The View 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
He's been on The View 10 times. Now you hear what they're saying about him on there. And I'm like, you guys were friends with him just a few years ago. You were having him on and you were bussing jokes and you were chilling and hanging. He's been on the show like 8, 9, 10 times. Like, and now all of a sudden he's racist. He's a white supremacist. He's Orange Hitler. He's this, he's that. He's railing up. This is Trump's America and he's creating this and that. I'm just like, man, people are, again, it comes back to being dishonest. I'm like, you people are not, how am I supposed to take you seriously? Because I don't have a, maybe you've noticed this too. I feel like everyone has a, do you feel like you're one of the only people in the world who has like a memory that's longer than 3 months?
Yeah.
I feel that way. I feel like people have the shortest memories now. Something will happen in January and now it's just May and people have already forgotten about it. And I'm like, wait, hang on here, let alone going back further years. And the media does this all the time, right? The media will, they'll say one thing in February, and then by like March, the whole narrative has just.
But that's.
I'm like, wait, hang on.
But it's honestly, it's because of the news. Like the news cycle is so fast now.
Yeah.
Like a week seems like a month almost. Like, bro, do you remember when the whole conversation about like net neutrality was up and like the whole world was gonna end? And now it's like the internet hasn't even changed at all. But people thought we were gonna die because of net neutrality. Ooh. You know what I mean?
You remember World War III in January?
Yeah,
dude, just January, World War III was coming. I was like, you know, and people were, I was saying, I don't think it's going to happen. And people were like, man, like it's going to, I was like, okay. And that's just been forgotten. And then again, with this whole like coronavirus pandemic thing, I think one of the saddest things about it all is the way it's been politicized and the way it's just being used as a weapon and this and that. And people are just trying to totally change history. People are literally trying to rewrite the stuff that happened. I'm like, yo, I remember like 2 minutes ago, you were saying that masks don't work. Don't wear, don't wear masks. Don't do this. You had in the States, you had a Nancy Pelosi. You had these Democrats. They were telling people to go to Chinatown, go and hug a Chinese person, go and do this. Don't call it the Chinese virus. Like, they were calling it the Chinese virus in the media.
The Wuhan virus.
They were calling it the Wuhan flu. And 2 minutes later, it's like calling it, this is racist. And if you do this, I'm just like, yo, this is insane. And even with the coronavirus reaction, people forget this. Because in January, people forgot. In January, they were on the impeachment nonsense, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
In January, they were obsessed with impeachment. And you remember the speech that Nancy Pelosi ripped up?
Ripped in half, yeah.
Trump talked about coronavirus in that.
In that speech. Yeah.
He talked about coronavirus in the
speech. And she ripped it in half,
and And now they're saying like, yeah, he wasn't thinking about it. I'm just like, man, this is insane. Because it's not even my country. And I'm like, how can a British guy who doesn't even have a TV in his house, how am I so aware and just clearly seeing what's going on here, and other people are just going along with it? Just like, it kind of scares me. It kind of scares me, because I can look back and see how certain things happened in history. Not saying that this is anywhere, not saying this is comparable, but the way people just go along with things, it terrifies me, right? It's scary, because you look back at history and I'm like, man, how did certain things happen, right? How could you just get some guy, you know, take the obvious example, right? Everyone uses Hitler, right? But
yeah,
I've been to Germany many times, right? German people are kind, friendly, decent, sensible. So I'm like, yo, how did y'all do this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like how?
How did all of you say this was okay?
How did this happen, right? Same in like Japan, right? You see this, the people don't even talk about the stuff Japan did in World War II, but it's like, how did you go along with this? Like, what? And now, again, I'm not trying to compare the severity of the things. I'm talking about the psychology.
Yeah. The mindset, yeah.
The mindset and the psychology and the desire to fit in and go along and just listen. I'm like, and the ability to just rewrite a narrative and just say whatever thing you want people to believe, you just keep repeating it, right? I mean, that's what Joseph Goebbels, right? I mean, he was the master of propaganda.
But I was gonna, like, that is where the game plan came from.
Yeah,
propaganda, like Nazi propaganda, I'm a college dropout, but my major was like media and communication, and I've always known how powerful media is, but when I was going to school for it, I mean, it feels like forever ago now, but when I was going to school, like, there was a level of journalistic accountability, and you wanted to be objective and truthful and put the facts out there, and like, that's what it was. Like, that's what we all thought it was.
Yeah.
But now it's like, there isn't that. It's like, okay, let's push the narrative, let's push the clickbait, let's tell them what we want them to think and say it a bunch of times, and people will eat. Like, it's to the point where, like, now I can't even have political conversations with most folks, because I'm telling, if I say something objective, people are like, well, you sound like a Republican. Or I'm like,
yeah, where's your MAGA hat, Steph?
Bro.
It's insane. I don't even, if I were American, I say this clear, like, I don't front. If I were American, I would vote for Trump. But a lot of the times when people call me a Trump supporter or say that I'm quote unquote defending Trump, all I am doing is telling the truth. Someone else is saying some nonsense that they heard from someone else who spouted some nonsense. And I'm saying, no, this is not true. I have objective. I can show you the video clip. You're saying, oh, he said this in a video. I'm saying, no, look, this is the video. Watch it, right? You get the biggest lie. People say he's called, the biggest one, people always repeat that he called white supremacists very fine people.
Very fine people, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that one is, that's like scary propaganda, because he said the opposite. He literally, clearly says, I am not talking about these people because they should be condemned totally. I'm not talking about the white nationalists and the white supremacists. And it's like millions and millions of people run with this many years later, saying that when I'm like, okay, someone's there telling me about how he's racist and he's this and that. I'm like, okay, tell me what he said. Tell me what he said that was racist. 9 times out of 10, it's that, oh, he said that, what? And I'm like, that is not. And then people are, oh, but yeah, you're just a Trump supporter. And, you know, and I'm just like, good grief. Like, this is scary.
and
this, like, is kind of disturbing.
It's funny that you even say that, because, like, That this actually started for me during his, like, because I remember my whole thing is, like I said, I look at politics from the outside looking in,
sure,
because the whole thing is a show for me, honestly, right? So I remember seeing when Trump announced that he was going to run for president, and I was like, oh, this is going to be so good. I'm going to watch everything this guy says, right? Yeah. So he was doing a speech, and his first speech, when he was talking about, like, building the wall and things that were happening, like, I watched the speech, and then I watched media publications say, he thinks Mexicans are rapists and criminals. And I watched that whole speech. He didn't say that. That's not what he said. Yeah. And like, it's been that a thousand, like, okay.
Yes.
Most recent one I can think of, Trump said people should drink disinfectant. You know?
inject Lysol into your veins.
I was like, bro, like, yo, I literally had to block people that I was cool with. I'm like, yo, you're spreading mental illness. Oh, I can't. So I'm like, it's like the thing about it is that, like, I honestly hate the fact, like I said, like, in my naivety, I'm thinking that we're supposed to be honest here. Like, let's be truthful. So when I see blatant lies, like, I literally hate that I am this way, because, like, I'm seeing the false narratives be put out, and me being who I am, I've got to be like, he didn't say that. That's like, even with Kanye, people were like, Kanye said that slavery was, I'm like, bro, he didn't say slavery was a choice. You watched a 10-second TMZ clip, and they pushed that in your mind, and now you think that Kanye was like, we could have just, like, that's not what he was saying, bro. No, but like,
he was saying there were how many thousands of you? That sounds more like a choice to me. That was closer to the actual thing he said.
Like, basically, like, honestly, like we should have and could have probably fought back.
Fought back, yeah.
And but we just didn't. And that is also even a sign of how people can be mentally controlled and mentally enslaved, because it's like in modern times you would think, how would so many of you let that happen and be subjugated like that? Mm-hmm. But that hasn't changed in a lot of ways. And, like, yeah,
do you know the big problem? This is a shift that has happened. There's lots of weird shifts that have happened. But one thing I've noticed is that in the past, you used to be able to talk and say things publicly and privately with the assumption that people would take the most charitable, that people would give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
right. People would take the most charitable version of what you said. So Kanye says something like that, and you think, okay, what he meant, he didn't state it perfectly, but what he meant is, oh, why didn't people fight back? Like, there's a mental slavery aspect here. Not that people going to Africa and taking people on ships was like they went by choice, right? That's not what he's saying, right? Because he's not psychotic. right? Or, you know, Donald Trump said this, and okay, he talks in a brash way. He didn't word it in the perfect way. But, you know, if you said that in 1995, maybe even 2005, people would get, okay, this is what's meant by it. But now it's like you have to state things in a way that the most despicable, most dishonest person out there who is least likely to give you the benefit of the doubt, even they cannot misinterpret it or get confused or clip you out of context or whatever.
And, but they will.
Yeah, they still will. But it's like that's really ruined people's ability to talk and have discussions and have debate, etc. Because it's like everyone's just waiting to catch someone out, or they misspeak. Oh, they said the wrong word. So you take that one bit of a 1 hour conversation, and this is the and they've done it to so many people. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, man, can't we just be, you know, just be honest, right? We know what people are trying to say. So if it sounds like someone said something totally wild, firstly, if in doubt, why don't you just go, sorry, wait, what did you say there? Can you clarify that?
Simple.
What did you mean by that statement? Easy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's frustrating. I do hope that I don't know. I do hope that that changes just for sort of the sake of society and culture and people being able to get along with each other, because, you know, people are going to be, people are different. People are going to have different opinions. People are going to debate, but ultimately we do all need to get on with each other. And in the grand scheme of things, like stuff is pretty good. You know, I know the world's not perfect. I know UK, the UK is not perfect. America's not perfect, but you've got people acting like it's the 1930s or something. And I'm kind of like, yo,
you know, but here's the thing, right? Like, I mean, like you just said, things aren't perfect, but the thing about it is that things are too good right now. Yes. And things are so good that people, human beings just in general, need some form of adversity, right? It's almost like, I mean, bro, you're a fitness guy. Like, I'm not as nice as you, you know what I'm saying? but I love the feeling of working out and seeing your body change and not even just your body, but your mind. And like, I love the transformative aspect of working out. It's like when you watch an old superhero movie, not Star Wars, where everyone's has all the powers and they're perfect. But like in old movies, where you would see the guy train and he's getting beat up at first, but then he's getting better or whatever. Like I love that aspect. Whereas now it's like, there isn't any adversity. So people have to make up adversity, and it's like okay, like Trump is Hitler, but like where's the mass genocide, bro? Like there isn't any of that, you know what I mean? And people will say like, but what about the cages? Hashtag Obama. But
you notice how that one's gone, right? How quickly did that just like that narrative? What happened to the concentration camps on the border? That was all the rage, not so, you know, this is the thing, people just forget stuff.
And what it's like, I said, it's a news cycle, but also it's them perpetually crying wolf.
Yes.
Every single time. And on top of that, I mean, like, bro, like I'm Jamaican, like you're Nigerian. Our countries have gone through some very real things in recent history, like in the past 100 years. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, the U.S. has too.
Yeah.
But like things are so good that a lot of people have lost total historical context of just how bad things can actually, and to be honest, I think people, they want things to be bad. Like, people wanted a World War III, and they want Corona to be more deadly than it is, because it's like, then they can use it as a
weapon.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. A weapon. It's like, it's like they act like they're good people, but you can't be a compassionate and really empathetic person if you want that type of suffering just to prove your narrative. But like, this is what people want. And it's like, and even to your point of like people like taking things out of total context, like, bro, speaking of even like what's happening with my company, I've had folks pull up tweets from 2009, 2011, 2012 and be like, see, he's a homophobic misogynist, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. And I've had to have, like, even my, like, I had my gay friends pop up like, bro, he's not that person. Like, what are you even talking about? But like, whatever people can use against you to make you, to demonize you, they will, man. And like you said, man, like, at my core, I'm a humanist in a lot of ways, right? And it's like, man, like I want humanity to be the best it can be in all facets. Mm-hmm. And if we can't have intellectual, honest, and respectful discourse without assuming the worst about each other, then we're not gonna get much further than we are. Like, in a lot of ways, I mean, it's so funny like that you said 95, between 95 and 2005, because I moved to America in 95.
Okay.
And I think that the 90s were actually, like, in a lot of ways, the apex.
They got the balance.
Like, it was like that was the equilibrium right there.
Yeah.
And then after that, especially after like 9/11, things just went haywire, man.
And social media.
And
social media. It's just like fuel on.
it's gas on the fire. And I just wish that we could get back. And I almost hate sounding like a man, back in my day, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I'm the same. We're both young guys, and I feel the same way.
Yeah, it's like I'm almost on a get off my lawn like type of vibe right now. But I wish that we could get back to just being regular folks who could have a conversation and just be cool with one another, man. Because if we're gonna always be at each other's necks and we can't even be cordial, like, bro, like, you can't even tell a joke anymore. And I don't even want to get to that thing, because it's like you got to be politically correct, and like, I'm not even saying it. It's like, bro, like, let's just be human again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you know a lot of it is, you know, I've got two thoughts on this. I think one is just that society is being too hormonal, right? Emotional. The emotion is overriding reason for far too many people, right? Mm-hmm. It's like society as a whole is like, I don't know, someone won't like this, but you know, it's like a woman on her period or something, you know, like we've been on it. The world's been having a period for like the past 6 to 7 years, right? So it's not rational. It's not rational. It's not like the emotion is taking over the clear thinking, and it's just temperamental and volatile, and people have a hair trigger, you know, it's like a hair trigger. Like, people want to be angry. People want to be outraged. People want to just jump, you know, what do they call it? Biting at the chomp. Just like, they just want to. And I'm like, look, just be reasonable. Like, just be rational, be rational. Yeah. And then another thought I have is, you know, cause a lot of people are questioning about like division and divisiveness and this and that. And I have a very simple theory, which is just a very simple conclusion that I have ultimately reached, which is that people are divided because they want to be.
Yeah.
I really think that's what it boils down to, whether it's, you know, red and blue or black and white or men and women or whatever. There is just a small, percentage of people who just kind of like it. They probably wouldn't say it out loud, but they like it. They get off on it. They like the red versus blue thing. They like the black versus white thing. They like, you know, the man versus woman thing. And unfortunately, it seems like a lot of those people have quite a lot of sway and power and influence. And so the normal people, most people who don't care about all this stuff, end up getting dragged into it and being sort of forced to care about it, right? I haven't given a crap about what color someone's skin is ever, right?
Yeah.
Like, from age 3, like, I've never cared. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like people are trying to force me to care. Do you see what I mean? And I'm just like, look, I've been over this since I was a baby. So 30 some years later, why are we now still having, why are we still having to do this kind of thing? You know, men and women need each other. We know this.
Yeah.
Men and women are like, this is how we
yin and yang.
Yes, this is how we exist.
Yeah.
So when I see someone who's trying to create like animosity, when I'm seeing like hashtag men are trash trending on Twitter, or kill all men, or, you know, white men this, black men that, and I'm just like, what's your goal here? You're claiming to be a good person. You're claiming to be a good person, but all you're doing is sowing these seeds of division, because you're now, that's, you know, men are not evil, women are not evil. Right. And then you get the reactionary movement on the other side of people going, oh, well, if you're going to say that, well, I'm going to say, and it's just like, come on, guys.
Like, I think that it's the thing where everybody needs an adversary. Like, have you watched any of the recent Michael Jordan documentary?
I have not. No.
Well, so one of the things that Michael Jordan used to do and would do is that, like, he would almost make you an enemy, like, even all right, so, like, granted, a lot of people that he made enemies were legitimately like people who like said something to him and like kind of challenged him.
Okay.
And there were some people who like didn't say anything to him at all, and he would just destroy them just because like, I have to make you an enemy in my mind so that I can do what I need to do. And like, I think that in a lot of ways, like, people just need adversaries to I guess fulfill whatever their mission is, but also I think that a lot of people, I mean, it's human nature to want to belong, whether it be to your family or to some kind of group or gang or whatever it is, right? So it's it's that on steroids, basically. Like people want to create that enemy where the mm-hmm. enemy isn't even there, just for validation. Yeah. And other folks who may be very impressionable, like they need that feeling of adversarial overcoming. Mm-hmm. So they'll join in that fight, not even really having an issue, honestly. You know what I mean? So
yeah, bro, it's tribalism. You know, human beings are inherently tribal, and you know, there's a good side to tribalism. It's very valuable in many contexts, but the where you divide the lines of the tribe is very, very important. And because mm-hmm. If you have an in-group, you automatically have an out-group. So theory, like my sort of utopian vision, would be, look, make the tent as big as possible.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't matter. Yeah, of course you have subgroups within that tent, but you can be pro one thing without being anti another.
Yeah. Right?
And this is the problem. This is why I really don't get involved in any like movements or
even
politically, I don't like to label myself, because so many people take in these movements, make being pro one thing anti the other. So by the dictionary definition, by the perfect dictionary definition, there is nothing wrong with feminism. By the dictionary definition.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? There's nothing wrong with feminism if you read what it says. But in reality, right, to anyone who's actually exists in the real world and has encountered some of these people, you know that a lot of them are very anti-men, right? It's anti-men, smash the patriarchy, crush, like it's very antagonistic. It's not a, okay, we want this thing, you know. Same with, you know, if a lot of people who claim to be pro-black, right?
Mm-hmm.
It ends up being anti-white.
Yeah. Right?
It's pro-black to the point of, okay, you're just now being a black supremacist, basically.
Yeah.
Just like, and then someone who's pro-white, they end up being like a white super, like in theory, again, by a perfect definition, there is nothing wrong with being pro man, pro woman, pro black, pro white, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Technically I'm all of these things,
but
the people who define themselves as those and then create the movements and whatever, it just becomes so antagonistic and hostile and aggressive. And it's just like, you know what? I just kind of put my hands out and I'm like,
you gotta back out. Yeah.
drop me out of this. I'm not getting involved here. Right. I have no beef with any demographic of people. Right. You're not going to drag me into this hating white people nonsense. You're not going to drag me into this hating women nonsense. Like, I'm just, no, like that's not, it's not how I was raised. It's not my values. I don't think it's morally correct. I don't think it's even accurate, right? You can't just take one. These things are groups of billions of people, right? I'm not going to judge.
Yeah.
You meet five bad women, and so you decide that like all
women,
I'm like, come on, man, right? Come on. If you meet one black guy who is like terrible, that doesn't mean that every black
man, or every one of us,
it's just, bro, like, come on, like, just use your head, like, let's be rational. Let's be reasonable.
I would consider myself pro-black. I'm a Rasta. I love Marcus Garvey. Like, that's my whole vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I got tons of white homies. Like, yo, white people love me. You know what I'm saying? like it is what it is. Because I love myself and my culture, that doesn't mean that I hate anybody else. I don't even need to do that, because like it's lame, it's unnecessary, and it causes further division and we already have enough of that, and we don't need any more of that. You know what I mean? Like bro, and like you said, like even to the point of like feminism, like by definition, I would consider myself a feminist because I believe in the equality of men and women. You know what I'm saying? But
90-something% of the country probably does.
Yeah, right. But I'm not gonna be like one of these losers who's like, the future is female, and men are, and all men are bad, and we're so bad. And I'm like, bro, like, nah, no, man. I grew up around women who are incredible bosses, leaders, like real matriarchs, and also like the men in my family, the men that I associate myself with, like kings, stand-up dudes, fathers, businessmen, husbands, like, yo, like, I know what it's like to be around good men and women. And I think that all of us do, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if you get on the internet, and some folks will say, like, yeah, like, men are trash doesn't mean all men are trash. And it's like,
change the terminology.
Change, exactly. Like, why even say that? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, like, it's like, bro, like, at the end of the day, we need each other. We complement each other. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's like, yo, let's, and on top of that, we both bring great things to the table, right? Yeah. So let's use our powers for good and see, and like, where I'm lacking, someone else may have that skill set, and let's bring that all together and do something great. But like you said, and like, that's almost a utopian vision. You know what I mean? And and really, it shouldn't be.
You know, like, what? It's crazy. I mean, I think that there's a minority of people who really sort of corrupt everything, right? Yeah. I think that we're saying this is utopian. I think that 90% of people in the UK and the USA are already there. And would be like nodding their heads to everything we're saying, right?
Yeah, totally.
I just think there's always that 10% who just, you know, there's just that 10% who are just
like,
no.
They're the loud minority. That's what it is.
Yeah, they're really loud. They're really influential. They always get into like human resource positions, or they end up becoming like moderators on these social media websites. Like, they end up in politics. They end up in places where you know, they start dictating to everybody else, and it's like, yo.
No, but Zuby.
Yeah.
Do you want to know why that is?
Go ahead.
And I'm sorry to cut you, but the reason for that is, and it even ties back to what you were saying about how the definition of feminism is one thing, and when it's become, and it's not even just in feminism, the reason why these people end up in these positions is because their goal isn't equality. Yes. Their goal isn't to be good people. Their goal is power and authority. Mm-hmm. And in their power seeking and their authority seeking, they get in these positions because they want them, because they know what these positions mean, and they want to wield that power to control the narrative, whether it be in media or like whatever. Like, they, because their main goal is power, they get there, and they're loud, and they try to sway what people think. But like, I think, like you said, like 90% of humans, just based on our human nature, would probably fight that. Yeah. I think the thing about it is that, one, most of us have lives and bills and families where like we don't have the time to even be counteracting that. No. But like, you've got guys like us who are on the internet who are like, that doesn't make any sense. That's crazy, you know what I mean? But I feel like in a lot of ways, it seems like we're outnumbered, but people rock with us and resonate with us because in a lot of ways, we're almost speaking for them in a lot of angles, you know what I mean?
And granted, silent majority.
Yeah, that is a real thing. That is why Trump won. Mm-hmm. That's why he'll win again, because people can't publicly come out and say that they like him or they agree with him or that he's cool, but like, yo, they're in their living rooms either cheering him on or just dying laughing because he's pure comedy. You know what I mean? Yeah. But like they will not say anything publicly, but when they go to the ballot box, they're voting for him, and they're voting right in a lot of ways, because it's like the left, and to be honest, like, my entire life, I would have considered myself a liberal or on the political left or whatever, as I think a lot of people would, because I mean, we're just humans, but like...
I wouldn't, but yeah.
right? But I've
like always just been like...
I remember in the 90s, there was like the super like evangelical,
religious, right? Yeah.
And I think that like, just seeing them, and how crazy they were, had a lot of us like, yeah, I'm not that. Like, granted, I'm not super leftist. I think that most people would be in the middle. But the way that the right was framed, it was like, yo, I want nothing to do with that. But I would consider myself pretty in the middle as well. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But it's turned around.
Yeah, it's like, full circle. Yo, the left is evangelical. not because they're religious, but because their ideology is their religion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's pushed. The window has shifted to where even if you are in the middle or even center left, you're basically
you're conservative. All right now.
You're conservative. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
I got an email from someone today from Ohio. And he was just like, man, he was like, yo, last month I came across your podcast. He's like, I've been a Democrat voter my whole life. And like something, he watched the one I did with Brandon Strzok, the Walkaway founder. Yeah. And there was something that happened a couple weeks ago. I think something in the sort of news media that made him just go, wait, like what? And then he just went down this rabbit hole. Like, I ended up on your podcast. I ended up on your Twitter page. He's like, yo, I've been believing like some nonsense. I was like, yo, this is amazing. He literally wrote me this like whole long email. I was just like, wow, like, good for you, man.
Bro, Elon Musk just tweeted, it's the red pill, bro. Like, it's reached a fever pitch, bro. Like, it's gone too far. It's gone too far, man.
It has, man. Awesome, bro. We could talk for a long time. But let people know where they can find you online and check out more of what you're doing.
Bro, you can check me out on Twitter, Instagram, at Steph is Dope, STEFISDOPE, Steph is Dope. On my personal website, Stephon Grant, STEFANGRANT.co, StephonGrant.co. You can join my email list. I'm a real estate agent. If you're in the States, in Florida, you need a house, I can help you out with that. And I need to get like you and revamp my podcast. I'm bringing that back. My YouTube channel as well. I'm doing that. Going to be putting out a lot more content, man. So yeah, just Steph is Dope on Twitter. Hopefully I don't get deplatformed. Knock on wood. I don't want to mess with your mic. But yeah, man, support me. Follow what I'm doing. And Zuby, thank you for the opportunity. And matter of fact, before I even wrap it up, I got to let folks know, man, because I didn't even get to finish telling them the story about what happened. I'm not even going to draw it out. But our former team member, after everything that happened, she got on Twitter and was telling people that because I blocked her because of some article her cousin posted, which is like super talking about how black men are the white people of like it was some whole wild thing. So after she left the company, I trolled that article and she must have saw that she was blocked after we stopped talking, whatever. And she went and accused me of not paying her and like created a narrative that I'm some black man who steals and hates black women and like crazy stuff. So the reason why I wrote that post is to clear my name, because I let social justice warriors create narratives about me and lie about me and falsely frame who I am. And that's not who I'm about. So hopefully if you watch this interview, you got an idea of who I am and what I'm about. It's all positive vibes. And Zuby, I appreciate you for the platform. Thank you, man. And yo, much love to what you're doing, brother. Thank you.
Much love, bro. Appreciate it, man.
They tell me that I shouldn't and I tell them that I will. They tell me that I'm cocky and I tell them that I'm ill. This game is not a hobby, I go in like kamikaze. Burn up tracks like Ricky Bobby, man, you catch and know the drill.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.